to another episode of The Last Post Radio Show. You're with host Greg T. Ross, and it's a pleasure to be introducing today RSL State President Duncan Anderson. Duncan, hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Greg. How are you today, mate?
Well, it's a great day to be speaking with someone across the West there. Of course, having The Last Post magazine having its origins in Sydney and then, of course, over in Perth, where my father moved, who started the original The Last Post. So feel a deep connection there. You're a WA man, Ben, born and bred?
Yeah, I am. I spent grew up in Western Australia. I would class myself as in and around Fremantle. Yes. And then joined the army at 17 and lived on the East Coast for 15 years and have fortunately ended up back in God's country over here in Western Australia, mate.
Yeah, no, fantastic stuff too, Duncan. We spent a couple of years there living with our father in Scarborough when we were kids or teenagers, and eventually made the decision, wise or not, to return to the East, because I think, as my twin brother said, Duncan, if we don't leave now, we never will.
Yeah, no, that's on one hand, I'm happy to sorry to see good people leave, but on the other hand, very happy that good people leave, because it leaves more space for the rest of us who do decide to stay.
That's right. And what a beautiful state too, of course, the beautiful Swan River and so many natural wonders there to observe. Talking of natural wonders, actually, Duncan, we might introduce you to listeners by saying that you're a young 45-year-old, and of course you've got a lovely farm down there at Donnybrook. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it was second career after the military. I started my first job out of the military. I was actually running a TAFE college here in Western Australia. And that was down in the southwest as well, and was through a pretty interesting period in the public training sector in Western Australia. And after 6.5 or 7 years, to give you a gauge of how much I enjoyed that, I thought starting a sheep farm from scratch would be easier and more enjoyable than being in the public sector. So yeah, it started farming. I joke to people it's a bit of a midlife crisis, but it would be cheaper and easier to buy a caravan and a Harley Davidson, write both of them off and start again. Yeah, so we've got a farm down there, run a couple of thousand sheep, Dorper sheep, which are for meat. And then, it's been a very interesting experience, mate, and one I don't regret, but certainly keeps me pretty engaged in the world.
Yeah, how wonderful too, Duncan. Of course, knowing the beauty of that area, because of course, when we were living in Perth, we often took trips down to Margaret River and down to Bunbury and Busselton and that area there. Know it very well. And it's no wonder that you've found a home there. And of course, it would have been cheaper to get a Harley and a caravan and write them off than to start up farming. But sanity doesn't often come into these things.
No. And it's interesting how you end up deriving purpose from what you might do. So a couple of years ago now, I was at a pretty key point where I could keep going with the farming enterprise, or I could stop and sort of cut my losses and go. And the rationale was, and I remember the exact spot on the farm where I was sitting when these thoughts ran through my head. And if I had stopped, it would have allowed me, the individual, to spend more time with my family and friends and do more things for me. And if I kept going, it would allow my kids, who are 11 and 8 years old now, to grow up in an environment that is just so rare these days. And so it was an incredibly easy decision to make. It was like, well, no, I'm going to keep going for this, because my kids get to grow up in an environment that I think will set them up better for the future. So it was an interesting experience to go through. And then I very quickly worked out how long I was going to go for, which is, and when my daughter hits about 16 years old, she's not going to want to be helping dad out in the sheepyards anymore. So it's a time limited decision, but one I certainly don't regret, mate.
Yeah, see, you must wake up of a morning, breathe that deep, beautiful country here that we know so well in the southwest of WA. And we're speaking with Duncan Anderson, State President of RSL WA, who happens to also run a farm in Donnybrook. So, look, it must be a wonderful thing. It gives you the energy, I suppose, to get up to the city, Duncan. And here's where we go, of course, because as State President of RSL WA, you have many tasks to perform. One of them's getting up at 7:15 and answering phones and speaking with radio.
It's the lead up to Anzac Day is always a bit frenetic, but this year's it seems to be busier than the last. But yeah, this morning was very much. I had a little sleep in this morning because I still serve in the Army Reserves, so I was finished up there late last night. So I had a little sleep in and woke up, and even before I'd managed to have my first sip of coffee, I had a bunch of missed calls from a local radio station that wanted to speak to me about the definition of a veteran and some surveys that people had done on polling on Gen Z and Anzac Day. So a nice, light, easy conversation to have before coffee, which I'm sure many listeners can sympathise with.
Yes, actually, that's true, Duncan. And it's a wide-reaching topic that you speak of course, too. When we're looking at generational change in attitudes towards veterans, we have seen an amazing change in Australia, I guess, since the 90s in awareness of Anzac Day, particularly, and leaking down from that an awareness also of what those in service go through, whether it be on the front in peacekeeping or well, so many places that have required our services recently. So, yeah, that's anything. And then I think we spoke about Gen Z not being as connected, but you're not worried about that. What's the take on that?
I'm not worried. I think many when you look back through time, I would expect that people 20 years ago would have said, "Oh, these young people, they're not connected and they're not like the generation that we know and all the rest of it." So I do think that as much as things change, they stay the same. The difference now is we've got this label called Gen Z, and they're just young people doing young people things, and so. Young people these days, and there's a Gen Zer in the house. My partner has three Gen Zers, I would suppose. I'm not sure what my kids are, but mate, they're connected, but they're connected with their friends through their phone. That's just how they do it. So I'm not too worried, Greg. I think we just need to stick to our what we value, and we need to be mindful, and we need to communicate and engage as best we can, and Gen Z, when their time is right, they will also engage with Anzac Day. So I'm not too worried about it, mate.
Yeah, no, look, an intelligent way to look at it too, Duncan, without peeing in the pocket too much. But of course, I recall at an age to myself, although my father served in World War II and my grandfather at Gallipoli, I was not really connected to the whole idea myself. I think people at some stage, particularly teenagers, are probably more interested in growing up and discovering themselves before they align themselves with anything.
I mean, one of the really interesting sort of takes on all of this is there is relatively consistent commentary in the media that this generation wouldn't stand up if the balloon went up, so to speak. And I disagree with that completely. Even now, recruiting in defence now, and if you break recruiting down to attraction, so attracting people to the front door, the processing, and then retention. So let's just talk about the attraction component of recruiting. Attraction to those to serve in the Defence Force has never been higher. So I think there's some of the commentary is a bit unhelpful and sort of breeds a little bit of disquiet and uncertainty where there's just no need for it. So I'm for those reasons, I'm not concerned. Like it doesn't keep me up at night. But at the same time, we have a duty and an obligation, particularly in the RSL, to make sure that everyone is informed and does have a connection to Anzac Day. And calling back to some of your earlier comments about this uptick from the 90s to where we are now, my predecessors all around Australia did such an incredible job with 100 years since Anzac. And that really has pushed Anzac Day back into the public limelight. Which I certainly feel is exactly where it should be.
So well said. And I guess too, we speak about the retention and I guess the idea that one particular generation isn't as invested perhaps only breeds division. And I guess also too, as we grow up, we begin to look at because we're not the same people we were when we were 17. We are basically, but of course we change and we become more aware. So like you, I really wouldn't become too problematic. That wouldn't be a problem, I think, with that supposed lack of interest in Veterans Affairs and Anzac Day. So, what's normally with RSLWA? What's your role How are you engaged in Anzac Day? Give us a bit of a rundown of your day on Friday.
So my role in and around Anzac Day is probably twofold. So as state president, I also chair the board of RSLWA. So we're responsible for the overall governance and of the league. And a key part of that is then engaging with our key stakeholders, particularly here in Western Australia, Lotteries West, where we get an incredibly sizable and generous grant from Lottery West to undertake Anzac Day. And it's close to $1.9 million this year. And so we're responsible for making sure that's used appropriately and acquitted and all the other bits and bobs. So Anzac Day for us actually starts in about the previous December when we get that grant in. And the lead up to Anzac Day gets more frenetic as the weeks go on. And media aside, in the lead up to Anzac Day starts the day before for us here in Western Australia. We have on the evening of the 24th of April, we have our All Abilities Service. And that really is in recognition of people in our community that not only have mobility issues, and there are lots of World War II veterans around, and a whole lot of other people that have mobility challenges and can't get to an Anzac Dawn service because of for a whole host of reasons. And then there's also a lot of people in our community that have centre issues that can't be around lots of people, and there's obviously lots of people on Anzac Day. So we hold that service on the evening of the 24th, which is growing in popularity. It's wonderful to see. And then Anzac Day itself starts off early, like everyone else, get the kids up, coffee, and then out the door. And really, it's the dawn service at King's Park. There may or may not be a time for another service up there immediately afterwards. I'm not sure yet. There's a sort of a bevy of media bits and bobs, and then we're down to Government House for the gunfire breakfast, and then the march down St George's Terrace, which starts at 9. And then we have a church service in St George's Cathedral starting at 11. Then I might get to catch up with a mate for a beer, maybe, because all this time my beautiful kids are sort of putting up with dad and hanging out with me. And then later that evening, we're at the Fremantle Dockers game, the Len Hall game, at Optus Stadium. And the RSL and Fremantle Dockers are working really closely together in and around Anzac Day, which is just wonderful. So by the time that finishes, probably at about 9 p.m., I think I'll be ready to tuck myself in, Greg.
That's right. There'll be little time for anything else, I would imagine. Duncan Anderson, State President of RSLWA and Chair of the Board, also. Look, there's a lot there to unpack for the day, and I got tired of just listening to because I know that for all of us, it's a busy time, and but it starts for you the day before, as you say, really starts the year before, or December before. But so you've got the evening service on the 24th. Is that also at King's Park?
It is. So the dawn service is held at the shrine at King's Park, and it's a stunning memorial. For those that haven't been there, it sits up off the top of King's Park and overlooks Perth City and the Swan River. It's absolutely incredible. And then just adjacent to the State War Memorial is the Flame of Remembrance, and that's where we hold the sunset service. And it's a really lovely intimate service, which is designed for exactly that. It's to allow people to commemorate and have that opportunity.
Look, I mean, when we were in Perth, we would sometimes visit King's Park, and I recently was in Perth and tried to take my partner there. I said it's not far, but obviously my memory of how far it actually was quite distorted, and we had to give up because we had a flight to catch. Then the gunfire breakfast. Tell us a bit about that. What happens there?
Oh, the gunfire breakfast is generally very much needed for myself and two small children. Traditionally it's a black coffee with a bit of rum and an Anzac biscuit. However, I think people may get a few raised eyebrows if I was feeding my kids black coffee with a rum. But now it's really an opportunity for people to they generally a bacon and egg roll, mate, and it's an opportunity for the community to come together, and it's in very graciously hosted by the governor each year here in Western Australia, because the government house, just for a bit of geography for everyone, sits on St George's Terrace in Perth. Across the road from government house is Anzac House, and the march is down St George's Terrace. So everyone sort of migrates from Kings Park back down to the city, and it's really a very impressive undertaking.
Yeah, I know that area of Perth well too, Duncan. It's absolutely beautiful. And yeah, geez, the Swan River there, not far away too. So totally beautiful thing. So tell us about the march. Where are you in that, and who's involved, and yeah.
I think I can't remember exactly how many groups we've catered for, but the march itself, my involvement, and I'm very fortunate. I lead the march with my children, and then fall out very quickly and find my way up to the dais with the other reviewing officers for the march. And really, it's an opportunity for those that are currently serving and have served to march down St. George's Terrace and receive the thanks and gratitude of the community of Western Australia. It includes current serving units, ex-service organisations, and some high-profile community groups. This year, it's being led by the Royal Australian Corps of Signals to recognise their 100th year, which is really important. And we also make space available to call out the widows of those that have died in active service as well. And so if widows and families wish to take up that opportunity, they're very, very warmly welcomed, and they take pride of place in the march as well.
Look, yeah, I mean that's so good that's being conducted that way too, Duncan. You mentioned something there about the history. WA, for listeners, WA has quite a significant role in the history of Australian service, and I know because we've been across to WA actually a couple of times in the last 2 years, Duncan, and done some trips up north and around Perth, etc. And found an amazing amount of interest in WA's role. We deal with Albany a lot too, and Albany's got a great Anzac Centre there too. How invested are WA people in the history of Australian service, particularly WA's role?
I think no less and no more than anywhere else in Australia. I do think that there are some site because Western Australia is geographically so much different to say the south coast of Victoria or the east coast of New South Wales, and the population is smaller than that of Queensland, I think from memory. But because it's so spread out, like the community in Broome, for example, or some of the communities up in north, they
Yes.
were directly impacted by the bombings in World War II. And they're a small community. And then you get to Geraldton, the city of Geraldton, up on the north of Perth, and they have, believe it's the HMAS Sydney Memorial there.
That's right.
And then you get down to Fremantle, and the city of Fremantle, which is obviously in Perth, but a city in its own right. And they've just had the HMAS Perth Memorial unveiled. And then you get further down the coast and you get down to Albany, where obviously the Anzacs first departed in the National Anzac Centre. And then right up inland, you get all of the different training camps and towns that were based on military service. And you don't have to go too far to find a story. But I think it's different because of the geography of Western Australia and how small some of those regional towns, you
Yep.
could argue that it has a higher prominence as a per capita type, if you're looking at it from that perspective. But on the whole, Greg, I wouldn't think it's any more or any less than anywhere else in Australia. We feel very privileged as veterans to be welcomed and supported in the community, which wasn't always the case. So it's a very welcoming community here in Western Australia, as it is throughout the country. And the RSL's job inside of that is to really foster that and make sure we leave the relationship better for future generations.
Yeah, so true. So true, Duncan Anderson, State President of RSL WA and Chair of the Board. WA's history is intertwined with a lot of people, and in both the city and regional areas. I was speaking to Rob Endersby from Meriden Military Museum just the other week, and he was on a podcast here for the Last Post Radio Show podcast series that you're listening to. And, you know, it says it's the every average Joe and Josephine that are out there too, helping the history of WA stay alive. What was the city of Frio? You said something about HMAS.
There's a new memorial. There's a group of obviously the community down south of Perth has a very high naval focus, particularly with Garden Island and HMAS Stirling, And inside the city of Fremantle, there is a new memorial to HMAS Perth, and they've just done an incredible job. And it's a stunning memorial that sits across the road from Lewin Barracks, where I currently serve.
Yep.
And it's in recognition of a whole lot of sailors that were lost. But again, there's even just thinking, and it'll come to me in a second. There's a wonderful historical association that meets down in Augusta each year. It's the HMAS Nizam, which was a naval ship that sunk, and a lot of sailors were lost in that as well. So there is a huge undertaking by volunteers, but I think someone smart would have said it before, the world is run on volunteers. Here we are. It's a great privilege to lead volunteers, but being a volunteer myself, I do know how much it takes of your time.
That's right. And bless the volunteers too, Duncan, because of course, as you say, yeah, where would we be without them? I was just thinking, so you have brought an energy to RSLWA, an energy, and I guess that's something that's to be applauded. How does it feel? How excited are you about the future for RSLWA?
I'm really, really optimistic, mate. I think in life you get presented an opportunity, and it becomes a pretty binary choice. You either, and my involvement in the RSL, particularly when I first started on the board 6 or 7 years ago now, was I could sit back and complain about it, or I could sort of roll my sleeves up and get involved, and here I find myself. So what we've tried really hard to do here in WA is make the organisation sustainable. And that's not, the term is actually really good if you can get away from wind farms and solar panels. But the sustainability in this context is all about our governance. So making sure our constitution it reflects our membership, and the community expectations and standards, things like codes of conduct for behaviour and all the rest of it. So our finances, so the league needs to be able to pay its own bills and pay its own way. So how do we generate sufficient revenue from our investment base to deliver services to veterans and their families throughout Western Australia that they deserve? And then it's about making sure that people in Western Australia really understand what the RSL is, and importantly, what it is not. There are lots of myths out there, and the myth busting needs to happen. But the RSL in Western Australia, we don't have large clubs like people have on the East Coast. We don't have gaming machines and colloquially the rivers of gold that are associated with them. So our revenue is generated from a property and a share portfolio, and revenue from our building at Anzac House here. So how do we do that and make sure the league is here for another 100 years? It's not a simple undertaking, but with sort of continued focus, and a willingness to take advice and improve, we seem to be making some pretty good headway, mate.
Yeah, geez. Well, hats off to you too, Duncan. And it comes as it's a good template for energizing when you're working off that base too. You've done a lot of good work to make sure that happens. So, do you follow the Fremantle Dockers?
I do. I do. I think I suffer with so many other Fremantle Dockers supporters. But yeah, as you could imagine, mate, my ability to sit down and watch a football game every week is limited at the moment. And this isn't a hey, look at me, feel sorry for me type moment. This is just a fact. I probably do on average 3 to 4 days of work for the RSL every week as a volunteer. I have two young kids that I work incredibly hard to be present with, and to be a good dad and do all that dad stuff like sport and school and music practice and all the rest of it. And then I've got a sheep farm. And in and amongst that, I serve with the Army Reserve. So to find 3 hours to sit down and watch a football game is a luxury that I expect I will not have until I step down from this role, which will be in 2027. So another couple of years left, but No one ever lost from working hard, mate. So work hard and do the right thing the right way, and the universe should look after you.
Yeah, how well said, because of course, working hard is, people may find this hard to swallow, but it's a spiritual experience for me. I know because, of course, the harder you work, the more you. And I met some amazing veterans through the magazine and now the podcast series since 2011, and you're one of them, Duncan Anderson. And good luck to Frio against the Crows on Friday night there at Optus Stadium. That's going to be a magnificent match. So, yeah. Duncan, thank you so much for being part of the Last Post radio show. We must make this a regular occurrence if we can. And to know the work that you're doing, of course, you were running a farming's a second career. You were running a TAFE in the Southwest. You're state president of the RSL, chair of the board of Army Reserves. And from Exmouth, from Perth, for Broome, Geraldton, Augusta, Albany, Kalgoorlie, Meriden, Frio, the list goes on. The wonderful people of WA. And they've got a great leader there at RSLWA with you, Duncan.
No, I re really appreciate your time, Greg, and it's always it's nice to sit down in sometimes a more relaxed and environment just to talk. So I really do appreciate that opportunity, and it's the work that you and so many other people do to support veterans throughout Western Australia, indeed, is just so valuable to our community and does form part of our community fabric. So really appreciate your time, Greg.
Yeah, no, it's been a blessing, Duncan, and thank you very much for being part of it again.
No worries, mate. Have a good day.
You're listening to Greg T. Ross and the Last Post radio show.